Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Nation of Islam, Western Region, Muhammad Mosque, number 27, and student national correspondent for the Final Call newspaper. I am deeply honored and humbled for the invite from Brother Darius Muhammad to sit in on this Thursday night, Beam of Light, Elevated Places. This was created, as you may know, by our beautiful sister, my mentor, his beautiful wife, our beloved sister, a star of God, Student Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad, and may Allah be pleased with her forever and ever. We pray that you enjoy tonight's broadcast, and we invite you to invite your families and friends, co-workers and colleagues to tune in every Thursday night. Our esteemed guest co-host for tonight is an Elevated Places favorite and regular contributor, Dr. Ritley Mukmin Muhammad of Muhammad Forums, Georgia, and the Nation of Islam Research Group. Our topic, the strength and legacy of Mrs. Mamie Till Mobley, and has Mississippi changed 67 years after the murder of Emmett Till? Our guests are Mrs. Ali Gordon, cousin of Emmett Till, and student minister Shahid Muhammad of Holly Springs, Mississippi. We will be taking your calls at 563-999-3065. But first, a brief look at current events. Right out of the Final Call newspaper, our current cover story, Power, Fear, and Council Culture. This week's cover is by our student minister, Demetric Muhammad of Mosque number 55 in Memphis, Tennessee. He is an author and member of the Nation of Islam Research Group. He addresses the growing vitriol as corporations cut ties with Ye, formerly known as Kanye West, following his statements exposing the uncomfortable truths and harsh realities about the secret relationship between blacks and Jews. Also out of the Final Call newspaper, our special section on COVID-19 and the U.S. policy of depopulation, Dr. Ritchley and I were part of the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance's educational conference attendees. We attended on behalf of the Nation of Islam Research Group to gain an understanding and find out more about their knowledge in treating spike protein-induced diseases And this is essentially the adverse effects of those, are these mRNA-based drugs dubbed vaccines. And speaking of drugs, did you know that according to news reports recently, Walgreens, CVS, and Walmart agreed to pay out about $13.8 billion to resolve thousands of U.S. state and local lawsuits accusing the pharmacy chains of mishandling opioid pain drugs, potentially bringing years of litigation close to the finish line. I look forward to hearing more from this about Dr. Ridgely throughout COVID-19, but for right now, let's bring in our co-host for tonight, Dr. Ridgely. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridgely.
Wa alaikum salam. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. How are you, Dr. Ridgely?
I'm fine, all praise to Allah. The phone be messing up. The tractor be messing up. So many things be messing up, you know. So I'm just glad to be seen and not viewed, and I'm glad to be heard, not smacked. So I'm ready to listen to the guests and to come in whenever I see that it's nice for me to come in and I can help with something in terms of trying to explain something or ask the question. I'm just thankful to be asked to be a part of this, and of course, you know, Minister Ava was my like big sister. She kind of looked over my shoulder, kept me in line. So I'm going to miss her greatly. But we must carry on and follow her example. I look up to her for the Minister Farrakhan says, B. He always heard, obeyed, and put things in motion to make his word bond. So that's what I learned from watching her. And that's, inshallah, that's what I will try to emulate in my everyday life, trying to make Minister Farrakhan's word bond and figure out how I can help him in his mission. So with that, I close, and thank you so much, Miss. I call you Miss News Lady. You really do bring the information. As-salamu alaykum.
Oh, please. No. Where are you going? No, wa alaykum salam, Dr. Ridgely. All praises due to Allah, you know. You really said so beautifully what was on my heart, and I'm glad you said it so that my voice wouldn't crack, you know, but not necessarily just jump in, you know, just stay there. I'm really looking for you to really guide the show in terms of the dialogue and the historical nature of it. But again, thank you for sharing what you did about Minister Ava. I mean, I won't even, you know, it's just so dear as well to me, and such a trainer and an exemplar. So, yeah, go ahead, Dr. Richard, before we're going to bring in Mrs. Gordon soon, but I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, is that right article for the final call? He would look them over and make great edits, even changing the title. And when after the end, I know that if it passes her, then the minister will be pleased. And that's all I want to do, is to please the minister, because through pleasing the minister, I please the people, and I please the God of the people. So
yes, sir.
So now I must kind of do that more on my own, but I keep in mind her thoughts and try to say how she would have put it, so that I can get it, not only get it right, but to get it understood. You know, sometimes we sign.
That's right.
We say these words that we take for granted, but you know, other people, lay people, may not understand them. So I try to break it down into a manner that people can understand it, because this is a matter of life and death, what's going on right now. And so I'm just interested to see what the guests say. I got a little history on the South. Okay, I had to get involved with that because of the Black Farmers lawsuit. And what I found out by researching how the U.S. Department of Agriculture did the Black Farmers all across the Southeast, I really learned some history. And these are some wicked, wicked people. And they work in cahoots, and they use your tax money to do it. So,
yes, sir.
It's not just a couple of bad apples. Oh, apple is bad. That's why we have to separate. Better separate. He went around the country pushing it. As Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, Separation is the best and only solution. There is no other solution to the race problem in America except that we separate. As I'm listening to these Jews who try to get us to integrate with white folks and knowing if I call a problem, then they come in and try to be the peacemakers. Well, they don't integrate. They don't integrate with nobody. They're very close, very close. Okay? Mm. They don't marry outside. Mm. They don't ask you to come to their synagogue. They're very, very enclosed, but they look after each other, but then they want you not to look after yourself. They want you to try to mix with somebody else. So we got to stop being fooled by these people in this late date.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. And with that, we will bring in, if our producer, Sister Donna, could, Elevated Places producer. Thank you, Sister Donna. Mrs. Ali Gordon, cousin of Emmett Till.
Hello.
Greetings. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Wonderful. It's a pleasure to speak with you again, and you're on with myself and Dr. Rishvi Muhammad, and we pray you and your family are very well.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. I would like to begin, and Dr. Rishvi certainly lobbing your question and comment, you know, this is just a great free-flowing conversation. Let us talk about the strength and legacy of Mrs. Mamie Till Mobley. Let's begin with your thoughts on that.
Mamie Till Mobley was a very strong mother. Let's say that, a strong mother, a strong educator, and a strong activist seeking justice for not only Emmett Till, but for all of the other Emmett Tills, I should say, that was before him and after him. She was resilient. She was able to spring up from the atrocity and the grief of her son and fight to bring recognition to all of the racism and atrocities that was going on in the state of Mississippi at the time. She uncovered that gross ugliness of racism. She showed the world what was happening as our people were being lynched and hung from trees, as we talk about strange fruit. You know, we read about it, we talk about it, but they didn't know, you know, because TV, she was able to show the world what was going on, not only in the state of Mississippi, but all through the South and even in the North in some cases. But the light was on the state of Mississippi, because that's where she lost her son. That was the atrocity that opened the eyes so that they could see. And she fought for change, and she fought for justice until the day she died.
Thank you. Dr. Ridgely?
Yes. You know, our mothers have had to deal with the loss of their children all the way back to in slavery, where they would take a pregnant woman and string her up on trees and cut her belly open and let the fetus drop out, and then they smash the fetus with their boot. When I read that at the Schoenberg Library in 1969 when I was at prep school down in New York, I went down to New York to study there. When I read that, I came out of the library, looked up into the sky, and said, I am dead. From then on, it was on. If they thought I was militant before then, they found a taste of it. And I thank Allah for the privilege, Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and being a lot wiser in my struggle instead of just being an outright militant nut, but being more wiser in my struggle because I'm after the big fish, not the little fish. But yes, our mothers have suffered for their children, for their sons. And unfortunately, sometimes I've noticed that they're so protective of the son that they don't allow him to grow as a man, because they know that if he intimidates the enemy, they might put him in jail, lynch him, or just shoot him down. So they're very protective and don't want their male, the son, to be too aggressive. to be too smart even, because it would get them in trouble. And I see that we have another guest on. It's Brother Shahid.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
All praises
How are you?
To Allah. This is Brother. Yes.
We can hear you, sir.
Brother,
I didn't mean to
brother
part of my interruption.
You there in Mississippi, Brother Shahid. What you got to say about all this?
Well, Mississippi is exactly what it's always been. Let's just be honest about it. When you look at the numbers, and first of all, let me please back up and begin in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. We want to thank Allah for all of the prophets and all of the scriptures revealed through them into the whole of humanity. And we want to thank Elevated Places for having us on. I'm actually multitasking here because we've been blessed to bring our audience into this conversation from the Mississippi on the Move podcast. Please allow me to thank all of you, Brother Darius, Sister Charlene, and Brother Dr. Ridgely for inviting us on to be a part of this important conversation that evokes a level of pain, if you will, when we revisit this conversation. I didn't have a chance to really listen to the commentary right before I got on. As I just stated, I was multitasking. But based on what we're talking about, the fact that we asked the question, has Mississippi changed 67 years after the murder of Emmett Till, the answer to that question is an emphatic no, emphatically no. Anytime there's a historical marker that's erected in remembrance of the tragedy of the loss of a 14-year-old child, and in this day and time, people will go to that marker and fire high-powered weapons at it. Speaks to the fact that Mississippi has not changed, and these were college students doing this. The reports, and it made the news. And this is what's going on in Mississippi. And you're still having instances, multiple instances, of black men being found hung with no explanation, unsolved, no accountability, no one being held accountable. And I'm sure you all remember, if you may remember back in 1993, I think it was, one of the student ministers of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, I think it was Brother Student Minister Charles, where his son was arrested and ended up dead in a jail cell in the custody of one of the, I can't remember the local police department's name. I had it in my head. But this kind of thing continues. And all the way up to today, dear family, since I've been there, I've gotten several reports of brothers and sisters suffering this kind of thing. The names, I mean, I even have the names of people like Raynard Johnson, a 17-year-old. This brother was lynched in June of 2000, found hanging, okay? No one knows what happened. Nick Naylor, 23-year-old in 2000, January of 2000. Ray Veal, April of 2004. Frederick Carter, 26-year-old man, December of 2010. Craig Anderson, June of 2011. Otis Byrd, March of 2015. So we're not saying 1955. We just said 2015. Philip Carroll, May of 2017. So, and I don't want to leave out DeAndre Hopkins, I think his name is, May of 2019. So this was just 2 years ago. And this is a list of men that were hung, found lynched. And it's like no one knows what happened. Local authorities are indifferent about what happened. And the list goes on. There are other names. And when you look at it and you get an opportunity to talk to the people in the different communities, the various communities where these incidences are happening, then what's happening today, just as it was in 1955 with our dear brother Emmett Till. The same thing is going on today. And that's where my mind is right now. And please allow me, I left out the fact I wanted to greet our dear sister, Sister Ollie Gordon, a cousin of Emmett Till. Sister, it is an honor, certainly an honor to share this platform with you, ma'am.
And also my honor to be invited to share with you guys.
Thank you. You know, thank you for that, Brother Student Minister Shaheed, and also for covering us in the name of Allah with your opening. You know, Mrs. Gordon, I wanted to just double back a little bit briefly and ask you to speak about, as we reflect on Mrs. Mamie Till Mobley, some of the initiatives that are taking place and developing in her honor, because as we spoke about briefly, you said this was not just a woman to be remembered as someone who had a son that was taken and killed, but what did she experience and go through up through the time that she did depart this earth physically?
She went through a lot of pain, suffering, you know, upon losing her son that any mother would, but however, I'm sure that hers was more intense, if I could say so, because of the manner in which she lost her son. She wasn't able to be with him and to see how he was mutilated and beaten and tormented. I'm sure I lost a child, and I know the pain that I suffer still from 2020. Mm-hmm. And my child was from natural causes, and I can only imagine still what kind of pain Mamie, Mrs. Mobley, went through, because to lose a child in the manner in which she did, I just don't think that I would have survived. So God gave her some strength. It had to be from God. She always said that was, she had to lose Emmett. He said that he was the sacrificial lamb. That was why he was born, and he had to meet his demise in order for us to achieve the liberties that we have today. And as the gentleman said, the atrocities are still occurring, because I just know of one recently down in Louisiana. I think the kid's name was Raheem. I can't remember. McMillan, I think. He was shot in the head, and then the cop emptied the gun on him. And he didn't have a weapon. So it's still happening. But Mrs. Mobley, let's back up a little bit. Most people, they're stuck on 1955, because that's when was propelled into the eyes of society. But I think the journey started long before she even had Emmett. I was just reading somebody said, you know, even when she migrated from the state of Mississippi, they talked there when she was in Mississippi and went visiting, and she went into the store, and all she wanted was a roll of toilet paper. And they laughed at her and taunted her and told her to use corn shucks or whatever. I think that was one thing that she went through. You know, she integrated the drugstore in Summit, Illinois, where they had migrated when she was only maybe 18. Before she married Emmett's father, Emmett Lewis Till Sr., that was their first date, and they went in, and they weren't usually allowed to sit at the counter in the drugstore, just as in Mississippi. But for some reason that day, her soon-to-be husband, Emmett Lewis, the senior, he decided that they were going to sit at the parlor and eat, and they did, and then other black youth started to come in. So that was the first integration there in Summit. They are right now erecting a statue scheduled for April 22nd at Argo Summit High School, where she is a graduate. She was only the fourth black student to graduate from Argo Summit, and she did graduate with high honors. And now today, I noticed that they are so proud to have had her as a student that they are erecting a statue that was created by a black young lady by the name of Sonia Henderson, and she did a magnificent job in capturing the spirit of Mrs. Mobley. I've been able to see the statue, and she worked step by step with the family, the intimate family that lived in the home and knew Emmett and knew her. Not like some people are making movies and poems and whatever else, and they haven't consulted the family at all. they're going by what's written in the book or by hearsay. So she had started her journey long. She started her journey long before she had given birth to Emmett.
Thank you. As we continue, go ahead, sister.
You know, there's many other things here, but we can continue with the program, and I can jump in from time to time, so because I don't want to take up all your time.
No, actually, feel free. I had a delay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought there was a pause there, but we would really love to hear your insight. I was just going to say for the callers, we will be taking your calls. You may call 563-999-3065, 563-999-3065, and press 1 to get in the queue. Also, visit meanwhile, MinisterAva.com, MinisterAva.com. There is so much there, her publications and other products, and right now there is a sale on one of her master classes. You don't want to miss it, and I won't tell you which class. We want you to visit and explore and enjoy her site. Mrs. Gordon, I did not mean to break your point, but since there was a pause there, callers, listeners, feel free to call in. Continue, because one thing you also shared with us in preparation for the show was how you really appreciated Let the World See. Everyone, this is a fresh and deep examination of Mamie Till Mobley's fight to bring her son's body home to Chicago after his brutal murder. And so continue, and also we will go to Brother Shahid as well as Dr. Ridgely for the panel.
Yeah. As Emmett's mother traveled, you know, as she gave birth to him, Emmett was a breached baby. They did not expect him to function mentally as he did. They kind of suggested that he would be institutionalized, but she said no, and they nurtured him. As she always said, he was a perfect baby. It was her baby. Mm-hmm. So prior to did suffer later in life, he had polio, which caused him to stutter. She taught him to whistle, open up his air pipes so that he could get his words out. So for years until the day she died, she always wondered if that had caused her son's death, if that was the whistle that they called a wolf whistle. You know, she had to carry that pain along with the grief of losing him. She cried every day. You know, she became a school teacher, and she would cry in the classroom. I've talked with many students that she taught, and they said they never understood. Sometimes she would just sit at her desk and just weep because they didn't know the story. They didn't know the trauma that she had gone through. So these are the people who don't know. They don't know that there was a time when Mrs. Mobley was not in the eye of the public, when she was going through the grief. They don't know that she became obese, the eating, the fighting, the battle with the eating. She became a diabetic. She was on dialysis when she passed. She was losing her vision. But, you know, she continued to fight. She would get off of the dialysis machine, and the next morning would be on the plane going somewhere to speak. So it was not even though she was powerful and showing the strength, she still was suffering and going through all of the other pains and had all of the other obligations that the normal person had every day. So this is a woman who had a life before Emmett's death and a life afterwards when she went to school and became a teacher. As she said, God took her only but gave her a million. She went to school and became a teacher. She worked in the church. They don't show her work in the church. She was Kojic. We came from a very religious family. You know, I look at some of the stuff in the movie with the partying and the smoking, and I'm going, I don't know whose house that was. It didn't happen in my house. Now, what I think, maybe they were capturing something prior to her having Emmett and prior to my being born. You know, I've heard stories about, you know, how young people were, but that was not the house I lived in. I was going, like, whose house is this? Whose family is this when I'm looking at this movie?
I understand. You know, if I may, there are two questions that came from offline on that. How accurate is the movie in the way they depicted the manner in which Emmett was said to have whistled at the woman. And then the other one would be, were black men really involved in the kidnapping of Emmett when he was first taken from the house? So first, the whistling.
Now, it wasn't until after Emmett's mother, Mrs. Mobley, passed away that some of the cousins said that he did indeed whistle out when she was out of the store. And they couldn't believe that, but his mother never could accept that. And she had suffered so much until I think Uncle Mose told them, just let her have that peace. So when she did pass away, the cousins that was there said that he did whistle. But none of that other stuff occurred or happened. I thought
yes,
that the movie, put too much emphasis on the wallet with white picture in it. Back in the day, as I understand, they did buy wallets and they did have these paper pictures in it. But the emphasis that they put on that, I thought, was given a little bit too much credit to whatever they're saying, going up to what they're leading to as far as him whistling at her.
I think there's some feedback. If anyone has the show on as well as listening, if you could probably mute, because I do hear the show in background. But what about the question of were black men really involved in the kidnapping, in his kidnapping when he was first taken from the house?
Yes, as I understand that, there were three black men involved. And as we understand, these black men worked for Milan and Bryant, and we don't know under what duress they were forced to accompany them with the kidnapping. I don't believe that black men would have willingly did what they did or helped if they did not feel that their lives was as well in jeopardy, if they did not follow the order from the white men. There was definitely three black men involved. Yes.
Thank you, Dr.
Wow.
Ritchie or Brother
wow.
Student. I know, right? I hear the wow, right? It's heavy.
I know that was. I'll yield to Dr. Ridgely. That was me saying wow. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead, Bill.
You know, when you have a pit bull, and the pit bull's master lets his chain loose and tells him to stick, on somebody, who's at fault? The pit bull or the one who said stick him? And you see, this is. We have been domesticated, and not just in slavery, but after that, these lynchings that happened after like 1890, where they were lynching a black person every 3 days for years, and putting it in the newspaper, having people to come to the picnic where they was picking
right
the skin off the bones of a burnt black person. So these things were made to continually put fear in us, and now we have these high-tech lynchings, the way they're doing Brother Ye, formerly known as Kanye. These are high-tech lynchings now. These are to remind us, to put us back in our place, and to continue the development of the ingrain. They say, why don't you just get over slavery? Well, after slavery, from 1865 to 1910, we bought 16 million acres of land. We put up 60 cities. We had 8 medical schools. By 1923, we had 200 hospitals. So we had banks. So we were working together. And then they came and they bombed us. Everybody knows about 1921 in Tulsa. But in 1919 in Elaine, Arkansas, they killed 200 black farmers because they dared to set up a co-op so they get better prices for their cotton. So this is a continual way to keep the cattle back in the fence. If they would just leave us alone, we would do good together. Now, when they brought drugs into the community, before that time, we used to keep our doors open. But now you got to lock your doors because you don't know what thugs is out there. But the government invented those thugs. They invented the thugs, then they put them in jail, and then they offered them time out if they would incriminate somebody else or time out if they involved themselves in some type of medical experiment. So this is a constant war against us to make us not trust one another and afraid of the master to the point that we won't even say that was the master who put me up to it. Okay? Just like down here, when I first got down here to Georgia, 2 years before I got down here, they had killed the head of NAACP in his office at Dawson, and a black man did it. Well, later on, it came out after he was in prison for a while. He told the truth. He was paid to do it. Okay? So this is the type of thing that we suffer on a regular basis to what? Make us not want to work together. Make us think that we can't, that we hate each other. They have this gangster rap. He just kill a nigga. You know, so it's being pumped on us by the same people who enslaved us, but now they do it behind the curtain of some black person who is trying to make it in their world. And to make it in their world, you have to tear down our world.
Good teaching. We're going to be taking calls at 8 p.m. 563-999-3065 and press 1 to get in the queue. Student Minister Shahid, Abdul Shahid, I heard you.
Yes, ma'am. No, earlier I said wow because as Dr. Ridley was just opining, really not opining, he was just stating facts. That's not an opinion. That's a matter of record, what he was saying, that there's always some of us involved in the undoing of one another in aiding and assisting our enemies to do these things. And we see the same thing today. I would say to those who tell us to get over slavery, I would say to them, how can we get over something that's still going on?
Come on.
It's still happening. It's just more sophisticated, as Dr.
That's
Richard
right.
alluded to. It's done from behind the curtain. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan gave us the definition of a slave, and we use it on our program because I think it's so very, very powerful when he said that a slave is one whose power and authority is ruled over by another and whose sphere of freedom is limited according to the wishes of his master. Well, according to that definition, we're still a slave because, as we see, during the time of Emmett Till, they could willfully go into our community, call a young baby out of the house, just knock on the door and demand at will without any fear of consequence or being sanctioned in any kind of way or prosecuted and get their brand of justice. So it is today. Police officers on forces, particularly in small townships in the Delta, have this thought that they can just waltz their way into our community, threaten us, tell a mother, I'm going to get your son. And with the same indifference with which Emmett was handled, they handle black boys, women, and girls today. They do the same thing. And you see it at the community level with regular everyday people, and you see it at the highest echelon of black people among us as you are watching it with our brother Kanye and Kyrie. I mean, it's like you do not have freedom of movement or freedom of thought as a black person. So to tell me to get over slavery when it's still going on is quite, you know, it's quite hypocritical. But it's a heck of a thing to watch, as we were saying, when I said, wow, other black men in 2022, either so uninformed or so afraid of losing something, participate in the madness. Because when the warrant for the arrest of Ms. Carol Bryant Dunham was found,
there were people that for years knew that that document was in that basement. There were black people that knew that that document was in that basement. And when it was unearthed, there were black people that played a role in this government still not giving justice to this family. And for whatever reason, as I understand it, years ago, it was because she was a mother and this, that, and the other. Okay. Well, what was the reason today? Was it because she was too elderly? Was that the reason? Well, they didn't see a problem with locking up 83-year-old Bill Cosby. What are you talking about? And not only that, the man can't even see. Meanwhile, Harvey Weinstein still walks free. So we have to get to a point where we as a people respond properly, because they are not changing and they have not changed and will not change how they relate and respond to us. So therefore, we must change how we relate and respond to them, and that brings up the conversation of separation.
There it is. Absolutely. How about we, Dr. Rizzi, I hear you want to make a comment, and then we have some callers. We can begin. Big wows, right? Before we go to the line, how about you, Mrs. Gordon? Would you like to add anything?
I'm listening and absorbing what the gentleman is saying. And even when we separate, ourselves, they still will not let us live in harmony and in peace and achieve what we need to survive in society. You saw what they did at Rosewood and in Tulsa. I mean, history continues to repeat itself.
Ooh, I have a feeling not experiencing that again anytime soon, but I'm not the God, so we'll see how that turns out. Go ahead, Doc.
Well,
Dr. Rizzi, pardon me.
You know, this is one of the issues that we have with our people over Tulsa and other places like that when they bombed us and they kill us. You know, we say, in the matter of fact, I'm looking at a graph. For instance, I'll show you this graph. Y'all can't see it, but I've done the research on the black inventions, the lynchings, and the acres of land that we had over time. And like I said, from 1880 to like 19, they were lynching one black person every 3 days or so. But all of a sudden, in 1930, it bottomed out. And so we in the Nation of Islam, I know the people get tired of us keep pumping our thing, but I'm sorry. The fact is that somebody came in 1930 and said that he had a wheel that could destroy America in 12 hours, and they took the writings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad talking about the wheel when they put him in jail in 1942, took those writings and asked him, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, these questions. And then in 1947, they had what's called the battle in L.A., where they fought against this wheel all night long. And so now in June of 2021, the government finally admits that they have these flying objects that move at 5,000 miles per hour and can turn on a dime without making a squeak. That they know these wheels are real, and they're afraid to come at us. If we would separate, if they come at us, they will be destroyed. Mr. Farrakhan has told them over and over again, here I am, come get me. But if you kill me, you will be destroyed in 12 hours. And so you don't see him shooting at Farrakhan, do you? So I understand our people, they admit that we are correct when we call white people devils, because they've told us over and over again, if we separate, they ain't gonna do but come in there and blow us up. Why would they blow us up just because we don't want to be with them? Why would they blow us up just because we want to be with ourselves? Why would they do that? They help Israel be by itself. They help the Jews take a country from the Palestinians so they can be by themselves. But yet, if we try to be by ourselves, we're afraid they're going to blow us up. Well, hell, I'm tired of being a nigga in America. I say to separate, let's see if the God is real. I think my God is real, and he will take you out, because now you have got to admit that what is up in that sky you cannot handle. So I feel sorry for my people who don't believe as we believe. I understand their fear. I understand why they feel the way they do, But we got to come up out of that and just do some thinking and some studying and start studying about these UFOs, so-called UFOs. Now tell me, what are they doing out there? Except we done told you in advance that they were out there. Now they're telling you that it's there. Maybe you better understand that that is a weapon that we have to protect us by our God who came the person Master Farad Muhammad. I hate to preach.
That's
I got
right.
When I hear how people scared of these damn practice.
Well, those people fear how powerful we are and can become. And that is the fear. That's why they play with the minds, with the drugs, and all the other things to keep the bulk of our people's minds in control, because they know how powerful we can be and will become. They fear that. And this is why they keep their feet on our necks.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ridgely, accept your own. And be yourself. Brother Minister Abdul Shaheed has to take lead. So I wanted to see if he would be able to give his closing remarks. He's going to take lead. And we'll come right back to you, Dr. Ritchie, because I hear you fired up.
The thought came to my mind as Dr. Ridgely was expressing a reality that has been taught among us in the Nation of Islam since the 30s. That America is now just admitted last year. You know, brothers and sisters, a study of scripture, and I don't mean to preach either. When you look at the peoples and prophets and the times, the most difficult thing for the people to accept during the time of the prophets was the fact that God had raised a man from among them. They didn't readily accept that notion. I mean, even Abraham had a problem accepting God's judgment of Sodom and Gomorrah. Listen to what he asked God when God told him what he was about to do. He said, "Will you kill the righteous along with the wicked?" As though God had not already made an assessment of who deserved to leave and who deserved to die and who didn't. And the people of the time of Noah, they laughed at the man. See, it's easy for us to accept the prophets today, but if you had lived during the time of Noah, a man preaching for 150 years that is going to rain and float a boat away that he has just built, after 10 years you're with him, 20 years, 30 years, maybe into 40 years. Well, after about 60 or 70 years, you get impatient. So now the people are laughing. And we can accept that prophets lived among peoples of old. And at the same time, many of us will bear witness, many white, clergy and televangelists and scholars agree that America is the Babylon of which the scriptures speak, is the mystery Babylon. And the Hebrew boys were taken captive in ancient Babylon and also in mystery Babylon. Well, should there be a Daniel among us? Should there not? They talk about a Moses, this government, and their documents. Jehovah, his objective was to prevent the rise, listen at his words, of a black Messiah. Why? Why, U.S. government, are you using biblical language in reference to those whom you've captured? Why did Thomas Jefferson say he trembled for his country when he reflected that not his law is just, but that God is just, and that his justice can't sleep forever? So, brothers and sisters, do we not think that God is not going to deal with a country that's brought millions upon millions of souls across the Atlantic Ocean and has murdered and pillaged them, and it continues to this day? And all of the events of those kinds of atrocities pale, not being using the comparison, but when you put it, when you juxtapose it to what's happened to us, those who claim atrocities have happened to them, they pale in comparison to what happened and continues to happen to us. So God has to send us somebody, or the scriptures are not truthful, and we can't say that the scriptures are not truthful.
Thank you. Let's go, Dr. Ritchie, and then we'll take some calls.
What I wanted to say was Miss Ollie, how you say her name?
Ollie.
I'm not good. Ollie. Okay, you are 100% correct, and I just want to emphasize what you just said, so people got to hear that and understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they are afraid of our rise. They've always been. Listen, if I'm running against Usain Bolt in a 100-yard dash, you know Usain Bolt is, right?
Yes.
The track star. All right, only thing Usain Bolt wants to know is how much money I got. He ain't going to race me for nothing. He won't know how much money I got because he know he going to beat me. All right? Now, but when we try to race, the white people always come with some discrimination. You don't discriminate against an inferior. You discriminate against a superior who you got to make become an inferior to you because you can't win on a level playing field. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that they will never have lived with us on an equal system because they know we will rise to the top. So every time you whip around them, they're going to demand to be in charge. They want, if it was a race, they want to be at the starting block with the gun, so they can call it when you jump the gun. Then they want to be at the end with the string, so they can determine who wins. And they want to put oil in your lane and not give you no spikes on your track shoes and not allow you to use a starting block, all right? Because why? They know on an even playing field, we will always come out the winner, and that's why they continue to discriminate, to cheat, to have one set of rules for them, another set of rules for us, because they know. They were so afraid in 1910 when they found out that we had 10 million people, and they thought we was going to die out, but we had 10 million people and 16 million acres of land in the South. So they always have known that we were not swinging from the trees in Africa, okay? We had civilization, and they stole us and sold us as engineers. Read the book that we put out, the research team, Jews Selling Black. They sold us as engineers to each other. So we built this country for them, and when they let us loose because the North wanted to take us from the South. And we went into the woods and started building civilization, a base within a nation, and they found out about it. They've been to war with us ever since, over and over again. Because what? They are intimidated by us. Okay? Thank you, Mary.
Ever.
Holy.
Yes. Well, let's go to the phone lines. We have Brother Darryl. Thank you for holding. Welcome to Elevated Places.
As-salamu alaykum, family. Happy Savior's Day.
Wa alaykum salam. Happy Savior's Day.
Yes, and to our beloved family, Emmett Till's cousin, that loss is also our loss because we are one family. This enemy, he wants to divide us. Different, we are one. I picked up this video about maybe 20 years ago at Walmart, and before this movie came out, I have not seen it because of my vision, but I heard people talking. But when I seen the video myself for the real, what happened before they came up this crazy video and got it all, you know, distorted, and my heart went out then when I seen this, and I look back at nothing changed but the year, because we're looking at our people being slaughtered right now. And that Emmett Till is going on all across the North, the South, everywhere black people are there still killing us. So nothing changed but the year. Just about 4 years ago over in Mobile, I'm about a 45-minute ride from there, there was a young man hung in the park. They said he committed suicide. Who commits suicide by hanging himself in the park? You know, so we know that is still going on. And rest assured, beloved sister, those cities we built, and they burnt them down over a lie, over a white woman, and whatever they have done all the years that we've been here on this part of America, that we have a living God. And Allah is going to handle this, even though the minister said, we say, oh, Allah, please handle this soon. He said, no, because if you wish for it now, you might lose your loved one. So he's giving us time, but that time is running out. Allah is not playing. There's too much killing going on. With the white man, plus what he's doing with us, with the drugs, we're killing each other. This brother got shot over 90 times, overkill, and we're like sheep. We sit back and watch and do nothing, like when the brother had the knee on his neck. we sitting around like sheep, like the minister said, and nobody stood up. We going to die fighting. That brother should have never died like that. But we are still caught up in that slave mentality. So the minister is telling us, be patient, because look what all I just did with Ian. Went through there and tore up all with a star. So Allah is on his job. We just got to get on our job and get away from these people. Well, what are we going to do? The minister said, don't worry about what we're going to do, what they're going to do, because we're going to go free. And all I got, so that wheel is real, like our brother said. You know, we have to understand scriptures right here in front of the minister's pages. So once we come together and understand that this world is through, we just got to be prepared, joyful, get together, come together, and be prepared, because this thing, I was a brother speaking, said, will we make it to 2025? That ain't nothing around the corner. That's how serious this thing is going. So we have to stay together, love each other. And I'm looking at back, nothing happened about that, even though brother mentioned all these names. There's plenty of names have not been mentioned. What our brother, baby brother, Tamir Rice, 13 years old. How you going to think that he's a 21-year-old, he's out there with a gun, a play gun, water gun, whatever it may be, and before the car stops completely, he gets shot and killed, you know? So
that's right.
It's just,
rolled up.
We have to, yes, and I was just saying, and I'm going to get off because I know there's other guests. I'm listening to our beloved sister, Ava. May Allah continue to bless in her spirit. Long live the spirit of our beloved sister, Ava. I was listening to one of her lectures off the time, off the Final Call Radio this morning. And she was speaking about what you said, Brother Ridgely, about the sister. She went to the white man back then that was a death sentence, demanding the man, her husband, to get paid because he got tired of working. He never got paid. He killed him, lynched him. Then she went and demanded them to arrest him. That was another death. Hunger, and came back 2 days for parts because they used our body parts for souvenirs. And a baby still alive. Cut that. One, our sister opened, the baby fell out and stumped the feet and crushed the baby head. This is what's going on now. So ain't nothing changed but the year. So this day, we just stay on our prayers because we do have a living God. Ain't no spook God here. That will is real. All we got to do is come together and love one another. And we just come together and be safe. And may Allah continue to bless our beloved sister Ava. Radio show, long live the spirit of our sister Ava. As-salamu alaikum. Love you all. Stay safe.
Walaikum salam. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brother Daryl. As we go to Brother Harl, I'd just like to say, our next caller, Brother Harl, I'd like to invoke some of what I heard Student Minister Nuri Muhammad as well as other student ministers and helpers of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan say, Pharaoh let our people go. No, our people let Pharaoh go. And I would also like to lift up here Minister Farrakhan's message out of North Charleston, South Carolina. He spoke about the inevitable, unstoppable rise of black people inside of America. So we've already been declared free. And again, as some of the panel said tonight, it's time to separate. You know, they've let us go. They have completely let us go. And we can see this, and there's no more use for us. And so now we've been getting gunned down. And also the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has said that the victims will become more innocent and younger. Dr. Ridgely, back me up.
That's right. Well,
yeah,
these vaccine shots, they aim at the babies now. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Let's bring in Brother Harl so that he may ask a question of Sister Ali Garden. Our other guest, Student Minister Abdul Shaheed Muhammad, has taken leave. And thank you so much, Brother, for being with us. Brother Harl, welcome to the show.
As-salamu alaikum. Beautiful show. Beautiful guest. As-salamu alaikum, Sister Charlene, Sister Ali, Dr. Ridgely, and Brother Shaheed. I know they have a great show in the Holly Springs down there. He's doing a great job with Brother Kenneth, their captain down there. And
wonderful.
I just want to say this is a beautiful show. You know, Allah said he's going to force us to separate, sister. He's going to force us to separate. And this situation that's going on with Kanye West, you know, we were talking about the other day, sister, the sister named Shalomon Alani, former Israeli cabinet minister and a winner of the 2000 Israeli Prize. She, you know, they're trying to call Brother Kanye and Kyrie Irving and anybody who speaks against these people who really started the Ku Klux Klan. And she said, anti-Semitic, it's a trick. We always use it to stifle legitimate criticism of Jews and Zionist Israel. She said, it's a trick. We always use it. When from Europe, if someone is criticizing Israel, we bring up the Holocaust. When in this country, USA, people are criticizing Israel, then they are anti-Semitic. And the organization is strong and has lots of money and ties between Israel and the American Jewish establishment, and very strong, and they are very strong in this country. And I like to bring up what Dr. Ridgeon was saying. We got an air force. We have nothing to worry about. Allah, especially when the minister leaves, you know, we're going to see all kinds of, you know, devastation, you know. So we'd have to gird our loins, and he's going to force us to come together. You know, we look at families today, Sister Charlene, so divided. We can't come together. You barely see people come together for family reunions now. You know, some families are more closer than others, but I see a big divide right now. And this recent situation with this rapper that got shot in Houston,
mm-hmm.
with Migos. Yeah.
Take off.
Right.
Yeah.
And this situation here where it was at a bowling alley rolling dice. We don't know, but like Dr. Ridgely say, they do put insurance policies on these rappers. You know, in Memphis, we had a rapper, Young Dolph, killed. And he was showing a lot of the rappers how to be independent and start their own record deals without signing with these dudes. So, you know, you look at Prince, you look at Michael Jackson, you look at Sam Cooke, and anybody who wants to be independent, you know, they end up dead. But like the minister said, they'll pay somebody, you know, they'll pay a crazy brother or sister to do it, you know. But this is a beautiful show, and may Allah be with Sister Till's Mamie Till's family. I remember she came on a show when she was living, Sister Charlene, in Memphis, WLOK. And it was a sister named Joan mm-hmm. Nelson. Her sister runs the Underground Railroad, and very beautiful sister. I remember meeting her, too, with Dick Gregory. They came to an event, and a very, very, very beautiful down-to-earth sister. And may Allah be pleased with her. And, you know, there's lots of Emmett Till's around here. You know, it was a brother, what was it, Mississippi, Sister Charlene? They killed a brother recently down there on the coast, shot him and killed him.
Gulfport, New Orleans.
And it's killings that we don't even hear about. Don't mention the prisons, you know. So we're just going to have to stand up and come together and unite. And Allah's going to force us. I'm going to let somebody else talk. Beautiful show. May Allah be with the Till family. Dr. Ridgely, keep up the good work with this vaccine. They're coming up with these flu shots. And, you know, trying to jab our people. And don't take that flu shot, family. And Sister Charlene,
you're
doing an excellent job tonight. And I'm going to let somebody else talk. I'm so full. But beautiful
wow.
show.
As-salamu all alaykum. Praises be to Allah. All praises be to Allah. Well, alaykum salam. You know, Brother Harl, and I want to make way for you to make a comment as well about what he said, Sister Gordon. But one thing you made me think about, Brother Harl, is the scripture, Matthew 10:34-39, and this is King James Version. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's foes shall be they of his own household. We know what time it is. This is all prophesied to come. And as the great Dr. Ridgely told me once recently, stop trying to figure it out. What's next? Because it's in the book. Thank you, Dr. Ridgely. But
yes, ma'am.
Mrs. Gordon, would you like to have a comment before we go to the next caller on what Brother Harlan shared?
I was just listening to him, and he is so right and so correct. And I did, I know that Mrs. Mobley and Minister Farrakhan were good friends. I also know that during her time of travel, the Nation of Islam provided her bodyguards. They traveled her almost everywhere she went, free of charge. And that has always been a great honor. So there was always a bond between the Nation of Islam and our family.
Praise
Look at that.
I didn't know that. Thank you for telling us. See, Minister Farrakhan does so many things that people
don't
know about. Even people in the nation don't even know about. But he's just there to help our people, whether people know he's doing it or not. All praise due to Allah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Thank you. All praise due to Allah for Minister Farrakhan. Thank you, Minister Farrakhan. Let's go to the next caller, Brother Louis Ali. Welcome to Elevated Places. Welcome back.
Peace and blessings, family. How y'all doing?
Likewise. Better and better.
I'm really touched and really feel connected to this show, Miss Gordon. In fact, very sensitive to all of the civil rights families, because that's sort of like my background. My grandfather is Lewis Allen. From Mississippi and was murdered in 1964. And really, when somebody in your family is murdered like that, and usually the authorities are behind it, the family never quite gets over it. So I can understand why Queen Mother Mamie Till, to the day she transitioned, was still in so much pain. I don't think that a lot of people really understand exactly what was going on in the South when Brown versus the Board of Education was passed in 1954, because Louisiana, Mississippi, and Tennessee created what is called the Sovereignty Commission, right, Ms. Gordon?
I believe so.
And this Sovereignty Commission was an internal state spy organization that kept dossiers on all the freedom fighters and freedom people in Mississippi. And I know that you know Horace Jackson and Johnny Mae Chappelle's family, but a lot of times what they would do, like in my grandfather's case, is if you did anything, the federal authorities would leak it back to the highway patrolman, what is now called state police. And then the state police would leak that back to the local police. And then they would get white citizen council or Klansmen, just depends on which day of the week, to kill people. And see, my thing that I'm saying is that these people come around these civil rights families, including mine and Emmett Till's family, and they write books and they make money. But a lot of the family is still traumatized and hadn't got the therapy that they need to be whole. And so these families have not received any sort of reparations or repair. Now, in New York recently, they quietly talked about allocating $36 million to the ones that they claimed, where they charged people falsely about the murder of Malcolm X. I know you saw that, right, Dr. Ridgely?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
But the thing of it is that the civil rights martyrs, none of those families have been given any form of reparations or repair. They raised over $6 million after the murder of our brother Emmett Till through the NAACP, and Mama Mamie Till, Queen Mother Mamie Till, got into it with them because they didn't want to give her anything. Do you remember, Ms.
That
Gordon?
That is accurate, my brother.
What'd you say?
I said that's accurate. That's on point, my brother. That's true.
See, this is what people need to know. They need to know that after you give your life for a cause, these same little small hats come back around the family and manipulate family members, sometimes turning family members against other family members for money.
Yep.
And
it's still going on.
It's like they kill you over and over again. Now, see, Dr. Ava Muhammad, she was so brilliant because she was so sensitive and she understood what we go through in the South. She understood our people. And one of the things she would always say is that Allah will make you separate. Now, when Dr. Ridgely said, I think Sister Gordon was talking about the three need to grows that were involved. We had a private investigator investigate my grandfather's case, Lewis Allen, and we were so shocked that two Negroes were right there with the Klan. But I was even more shocked to find out that the Klan had a black hit team. There's a book called Spies of Mississippi, where they talk about these Negroes that would go around. You remember when they had Fannie Lou Hamer in prison?
Yep.
And they open up all those windows in Mississippi jails and let those mosquitoes bite you and animals bite you all night, let the dogs bite you. But then they would do worse. They would get big black Negro males and let them or force them to go in there and beat the women. They beat Fannie Lou Hamer so bad in those Mississippi prisons till one of the slaves just said, "I can't beat her no more." She was never quite the same. I know this because in 1964 she rode on a train with my grandmother Elizabeth Allen to give a testimony about what life was like in Mississippi in 1964. Now look, we can win because Dr. Ava always told us we were the winners, but it's something we got to do.
That's right.
Integration has failed because integration is a sin. And the wages of sin is death. But the gift of God is eternal life. So we must repent and atone to Mr. Muhammad and pool our resources together and follow what Minister Farrakhan is saying about making our own communities a safe and decent place to live. If we make our own communities safe and decent places to live, more and more people will become attracted to the idea of total separation.
That's
Minister
right.
Farrakhan, when we were in Birmingham, Alabama, doing a separation town hall meeting, shout out to Brother Darius because he was there, but we were supposed to go over into Tennessee, and Hoyle knows about this also. But when Minister Ava Muhammad talked to Minister Farrakhan, he summons her back to Chicago, and we didn't go over into Tennessee the next day. And Dr. Ava told me that the minister said, separation is a process. So we have to become mature enough to become producers for ourselves. Doing for self has to be at the forefront of our mind in order for us to come out of this type of sick thing. And they got some really sick stuff planned. And I'm hoping, because I called some of the other civil rights families and asked them to tune into this show. But all of those of us who've lost loved ones in this movement should unite. They gave $10 million, I think it was under Bush, Sister Charlene. Well, how much did the families get? We didn't get a nickel of that money. But they pimped us out there in the media like we was getting something. This is a charade. I'm sorry, but may Allah bless you, Sister Gordon, and I love y'all. I'm y'all in my prayers, and we're going to keep fighting.
Yeah, stay
out.
No, sir, Brother Louis Ali. You cannot just leave us like this, because you drop a lot of great truths. You were dropping bombs, and we want to dialogue with you about that, because you heard Dr. Richard as well as Mrs. Gordon get ready to chime in. So, Mrs. Gordon, you first.
Well, I was listening to him, and that's quite an education I'm getting here. And also a boost to continue my fight and my strive to help educate my people and mobilize them to want to separate and become more self-sufficient. You know, and I listen because with all this shooting of our people killing each other, these weapons and guns are being put in our community.
Come on.
They're being, and I've heard they're being dropped on the streets. The trains are being left unlocked. You know, they're making them accessible, because they're not able to go and buy some of these high-powered weapons.
Right.
So we're being pitted, you know. They don't have to lynch us now and hang us from trees. They just give us the drugs and give us the guns, and we just destroy each other. And that's
well,
somebody
you know,
that
time. Well, you know, sister, that's exactly how they got us over here. They brought liquor and guns off the coast of Africa by mulattoes into Africa, and they got the Africans to fight and kill one another, and then took the captives and put them on ships as slaves and brought them to America. So this same tactic of bringing alcohol, drugs, and then the guns, and then lies to get us to fight and kill one another is their age-old trick. And, you know, Islam comes after everything fails. If we had not gone through integration, if we had not failed for integration 1,000%, there'll be some people amongst us today who would say we need to integrate. But now we have a history. It's the 1964 Civil Rights Bill. We have a history of trying to force integration on people that hate us. And now what do we have? We got one hospital left. We lost our HBCUs to whites and immigrants. So we lost everything that we had when we were under segregation. We lost our hospitals. We lost our bus companies. We lost our businesses, all thinking that we would be a part of America. And they took us on this long ride, gave us some jobs, let us in the union, and then took the jobs all offshore to Mexico, to India, to China. And now China is sending jumped back over here by the train load, by the ship load. And we don't have jobs. So we should now understand that, yes, we were tricked with immigration, but we had to try it. Now we know it. Now we should know better. Now we need to do it. That is, separate and do something for ourselves. Trade with white folks when the trading is right. But I'm not trading myself as free fifth of a man no more. You got to pay me my worth. If I got a product, you pay the retail price and not the negative white man price. You understand what I'm saying? We charge us full price, but we're supposed to give them a discount. No. We're going to have respect for ourselves like we did when we came up out of slavery. That period of history, they've hidden from us. They're trying to make us think we never tried to unite. Remember, I just told you, look it up, 1919, Elaine, Arkansas. They killed 200 black farmers because they had the nerve to set up a co-op to get better prices for their cotton. Okay? It ain't that we ain't tried. But now we got a plane, and we got a history now of understanding there's no way out of this thing except with self. We can only depend on self and God, not these people and not these small hats, Brother Lewis. People might not know what he meant with that. Small hats is Jews. That's the undercover name for Jews, okay? Small hats, that's Jews. We got to stop trusting these people. So these people have always tried to get the black to fight against the white, and then come in as a peacekeeper so they can rule both. White folks are finally waking up to these Jews, who act like they're white when amongst Jews and act like they're black when they're amongst us. I'm going to stop preaching.
You have about people of color now.
Right,
did you say
right.
Sister? I said, yeah, you have everybody saying they're people of color now because they want the benefits of what we got under the Civil Rights Act. So you got people now, people of color.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you look at the definition of discrimination now, I think black quote unquote African American may be probably fourth or fifth down the line. You know, gender has moved all the way up to the front of the bus. So, you know, but who's doing, right? We talk about, in truth, some of the responsibility lies within.
That's right.
That's
right. You got to take responsibility. That's one thing about the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. They did not hold back on pointing the problems with black folks where they had a problem, and they did not hold back on pointing out to what when white folks got a problem, when Jews got a problem. We just tell the truth, and we all need to get it straight. And one thing we got to understand is that white folks came from us. So what you see came from us. We was first. They came later. They came from us. We need to study them to see what is still remaining in us so we can get rid of them in us, and then they will go away. Thank you.
Great point. Brother Louis Ali, are you still with us? Because I have a question. I'll pose it anyway. I'm not sure if he's gone. He's like, you don't tell me where to stay. but let's discuss this. I'm looking at now, you know, we're in midterm, right? The midterm election is here. However people feel about voting, I know that we were told to register and vote your conscience and also, you know, just register and hold your vote for such a time as when we may, you know, exact that power. But I'm looking at our dear brother attorney Benjamin Crump, and he is aptly demanding justice in terms of our young brother, 15 years old, Jaheim McMillan in Gulfport, Mississippi. And Attorney Crump and I'm sure others are fighting for the release of the footage from the incident. We still cannot get the footage, not that we want it plastered over the news and desensitizing us and conditioning us to see black bodies and blood spewed across the screen, but this is, if I would say, modern day Emmett Till.
Yeah.
What's up, black people? What are we? Come on.
Well, you know, they do show us being victimized when they have another agenda. Now, when they the one thing that they don't talk about, may have overlooked, is that George Floyd was killed 2 days after. He was killed on May 25th, 2020. On May 23rd, at the end of Ramadan, May 23rd, Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that because of the passing of my brother Abdul Hafiz in New York through the minister, Abdul Hafiz, that he was going to talk about COVID-19 on July 4th. And it just so happened the next day, two days later, George Floyd on film. Now, you think they're going to do this and allow somebody to film them? Come on, y'all. This was all, in my opinion, to get Mr. Farrakhan off of exposing this pandemic called COVID-19 and these death shots, these bioweapons called the so-called vaccine. But Mr. Farrakhan did not allow them to take him off his post. He mentioned George Floyd. He mentioned the police. He said, but the method that they used on killing George Floyd is the Israelis came to America to teach the police department to do that type of chokehold. And then he went on to the real problem, which was the so-called vaccines that were death. And he called it 6 months before they even brought it out. He called it, this is death. And he told the African president, don't allow this in your country. And they killed some African presidents because they wouldn't allow it in their country. And yet only 6% of the Africans took the vaccine, and they didn't take the vaccine that they made for them, and they wound up having to give those vaccines to their own white brethren. And now their white brethren are dying, are being crippled, and they are very angry to know that it was their government that did it to them. So they thought they could just do it to us. But no, they did it to their own. So we in the middle of a serious crisis. And nobody, if the Republicans don't win in this election, they already said they're not going to accept who they put in office. So it's about to get
up. They already said that.
Go ahead.
What did you say, Mrs.
No, I said they've already told us that. You know, they have a right now. They don't have to accept the ballot as it is. They can recall it. So, you know, in these different states. So they say that if they lose, they're going to stage a fight. So,
well,
we
already
need to get out of the way. We need to get out of the way. Let the white folks fight it out. Let the white folks fight. We need to get out of the way and go to our own. Let the white folks fight it out.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. You know, there was a question I wanted to ask in terms of what you were saying about that. Oh, you know, in terms of these clot shots, as we heard one of the doctors say it at the FLCCC conference, Dr. Risley, you know, now they're reporting very largely on, Attorney Robert F. Kennedy's The Real Dr. Fauci documentary, where the doctors in it were speaking about the lots. Remember the different lots of the vaccines, and depending on the lot number where the so-called vaccine went, then the adverse reactions was skyrocketed compared to certain other neighborhoods, but they were all damaging. So thanks for bringing that up. You know, I thought about that, The Real Anthony Fauci. That's a very good documentary, a must-watch.
Yeah, a must-watch. You are correct.
It talked about a lot of the HIV-AIDS era and how Fauci just really, from president to president to president to president, just really used gain-of-function practices and for these drugs. And I'm not immune. My own sister had taken that AZT. A lot of people, she stopped, but a lot of people did that drug that did nothing, pretty much like this mRNA, except for ruin people's lives. But I won't go too far down that. But the depopulation section, depopulation, U.S. policy of depopulation agenda in the Final Call newspaper around COVID-19 is a must read. And as our dear beloved Sister Minister Ava would say, every page of that Final Call, download the digital description, and we should be reading that paper. But go ahead, Dr. Ridgely and Mrs. Gordon. Actually, is Brother Ali back with us?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, Brother Ali, thank you, brother. I said, you couldn't go. You really dropped a lot of information. I have a question for you. The Allenstown here in California, is that part of your heritage as well, Colonel Allensworth? I mean, an all-black town here?
I've heard of it, but I'm not so sure, because in 1913 we had 640 acres of land, and there was an incident on the land where two whites got killed and the family had to split up overnight. So we're still trying to get it all back together.
Oh, I understand. And I should be saying, I'm sorry to everyone, it's Colonel Allensworth State Historic Park. And this is actually, let me give you some information about it just because I asked him. I'm sorry. I went there once. I couldn't believe it. I happened upon it when I was a real estate appraiser and learned about this place also through local radio here on Brother Stevie Wonder Station, but it's not coming up. But pretty much it's black land, if you will. And it had, you know, the powers that be have been trying to take it, but it is still there, Colonel Allensworth State Historic Park. So thank you for answering that, Brother Allen.
Thank you so much.
Can you expand a little bit on your grandfather? And we have a story in the Final Call newspaper about him, but could you just talk some more about your grandfather and the experience?
Well, my grandfather, Lewis Allen, was a business person in a little town called Liberty, Mississippi. And a lot of the activists back then, and I'm talking Julian Bond and different people, would come down south, and my grandfather would actually use some of his business money to help, you know, with the Freedom Rides and help with the Freedom Schools and so forth. And so when they got onto him, they figured out that the local president of the NAACP, Mr. Herbert Lee, was murdered in 1961. And three other people saw it along with my grandfather, but my grandfather was the only one who actually wanted to tell the truth about it. The coroner commission, which was really the Klan commission, forced him to say that Mr. Herbert Lee had a tire iron in his hand when the Mississippi State Legislature, E.H. Hurst, murdered him in cold blood. And so because my grandfather actually was registering voters and tried to call the actually spoke to J. Edgar Hoover, actually, about getting some type of security, they leaked the story back to the local authorities, and maybe a day before my grandfather was to leave Mississippi, he was murdered. Mississippi covers up so many murders because my grandfather's first cousin, who actually worked for him, maybe in November of 1963, he and his whole family were killed and burnt up in the house, and nobody was arrested. His name was Leo McKnight. But that's just a little of what happened with my grandfather. They tried to boycott his business, wouldn't sell him any fuel or supplies in the town, so he used to have to travel all the way to Louisiana just to get gas. You know?
Wow. Thank you. Dr. Ritchie?
Yeah, and what he just said reminded me of what happened here in Terrell County back in the 60s when SNCC came through registering black folks to vote. At that time, there was about 10,000 black folks in Terrell County, but only eight people could vote, only eight black people could vote. And so SNCC came through, and they picked a lot of the young people up and put them in jail. But it was a black farm because they had property. They were able to put up the bond using their land as collateral to get them out. And because they did this for these young people, the black farmers in Terrell County could not buy or sell anything in Terrell County. They couldn't buy gas. They couldn't buy seed. They couldn't buy fertilizer. They couldn't sell peanuts. They couldn't sell cotton. They couldn't buy nor sell anything in Terrell County. They had to go outside the county to do business as reparations on them for what they did to help the civil rights movement in Terrell County, Georgia. So there's a continual history of that. When people help each other, they punish the people who help the underdog, help somebody. They punish us to keep us working together. So thank you very much, Brother Lewis, for bringing that to my mind.
Absolutely. Mrs. Gordon, any comment before we go to another caller?
I'm getting a good education. I'm enjoying it. I am very, I'm really enjoying what I'm hearing here. And I'm working with the Emmett Till, Mamie Till Mobley Institute that's being developed for educating youth in the high school. So I'm like a sponge, and I'll be talking to you to get some more titles of these books and things that we should be reading.
Absolutely. Oh, isn't that wonderful? That's wonderful news.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you for that. Yeah. Well, let's bring in Shelton Chappelle. Welcome to Elevated Places. And look, all praises due to Allah for student minister Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Blessings to each of you. Thank you so much for taking my call. I want to just commend each of you for what you're doing, what you stand for. And I want to give a shout out especially to Brother Lewis Allen for inviting me to the show. I really don't have much because I'm full with this, because my mother in 1964, March, you can see it in the Jet magazine, that my mother, Miss Johnny Mae Chappelle, was killed by four white men in Jacksonville, Florida. I was the youngest child of 10. I was 4 months old, not 4 years old, not 14, not 44 months old. It's hard for me to talk about it because it hurts me to this day. I never got a chance to see her, know her, say happy birthday, happy Mother's Day, and all of those things that you would say as a family. But I'll say this. We were split up by that city of Jacksonville, Florida, put in foster homes separately.
Mm.
Because these people killed, white people killed my mother. I was in 10 separate foster homes to my family.
Wow.
I'm nearly 60 years old now.
Mm.
And it still hurts.
Mm.
You can't imagine what we've had to deal with.
Mm.
I just thank God for each of you and the civil rights family. We have each other's phone numbers. We talk maybe on a weekly basis or monthly basis. And that's what helps each of us get through. And I want to mention what Brother Allen had said about the $10 million, whatever they was given. That didn't last 1 year. They did that for several years. What did they do to help the family? What did they do to the community? There's nothing. So that money was circling right back into their pockets.
Come
and
on.
The family be nothing. It's not about the money. It's just the respect. I really can't speak to this right now, but you know where I'm at with this. So, again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, and keep the fight.
Oh, wow. All praise is due to Allah, God. My heart goes out. Our prayers are with you. You know, if I may, listeners and our guests, Mrs. Gordon and also Dr. Ridgely, if I may just lift up her name, Johnny Mae Chappelle, and just give a little background. What I'm looking at is off of the Jim Crow Museum. And Brother, thank you. And Brother Louis Ali, thank you for bringing attention to those of us who were not aware, because I certainly wasn't, about your dear mother. But this is March 23rd, 64, race riots raged in downtown Jacksonville, Florida. Johnny Mae Chappelle, 35-year-old wife and mother of 10 children, was not anywhere near downtown that evening, though. Instead, she was frantically searching the roadside near her home in Pickettville, the poor all-black neighborhood in the Jacksonville area, with two neighbors. She was hoping to find the wallet she had lost on her way home. Unfortunately, she would lose her life to senseless violence that night simply because of the color of her skin. Unimaginable. I will stop there. You know, Brother, I can just feel your heart. Dr. Ridgely and Mrs. Gordon, would you like to say anything?
I did have the honor of meeting one of Mrs. Chappelle's children, I believe, with my daughter a few years back as we were traveling to Jacksonville. And we did, I think we went to a couple of areas where the incident took place.
Yes.
I don't know if it was the gentleman that's speaking or not, but I did have the honor of meeting one of the children.
Yes, it is me.
That was you. So you do recall myself and my daughter, Erica Gordon Taylor.
Yes, I do. Yes, absolutely. That was me.
And you are always my thoughts and my prayers.
Yes, thank you so much.
Wow.
And my
heart is
Erica.
My heart is heavy, but I'm so honored to be speaking with you again and know that you're doing as well as you can be with the burdens that you carry.
Thank you so much. And likewise with you and your family.
Thank you.
Elevated places. I mean, I'm looking, your mother is so beautiful, the portrait that I'm looking at whoever did this, the portrait of her. You know, see, this is Elevated Places connecting, reuniting family. Go ahead, Dr. Ritchie. Take it away.
No, I didn't want to interrupt that. I was just saying witness. That's right. I mean, I think that we're making a call. Okay, I think Ms. Gordon is coming to help us make this call. And how do we, like Mr. Farrakhan said, how do we channel the pain of our peoples and what we went through? We have to channel that into some productive work to make them know, our ancestors know, that they did not die in vain. Groundwork for us to move forward. You know, I just was reading a book from the Federal Reserve talking about the let us put our money together. It's really a book about the first black banks in America. You know, we had 50 black-owned banks in 1906. Okay? So we met the National Negro Business League, met in Atlanta, and 19 institutions came, and they established a national banking association for black-owned banks. All right? And then in the same year, in 1906, after they had that meeting, they had a riot. They called it a riot. It was not a riot. Look it up, 1906 Atlanta riot. Well, it really wasn't a riot. It was 10,000 white people going through the black community, hanging black people up on light poles. Okay, they killed, in a 3-day stint, they killed 40 black people. And after they did it, they had a meeting. They called in all the preachers. And the whites told the black preachers, y'all better stop talking about politics and economics in your pulpit. Stick to Jesus and the people going to heaven after they die. If you don't, mm-hmm. you're coming back in your community and do it again. Okay? When they saw mm-hmm. that we had 50 black-owned lending institutions across America, they didn't know that until we had our meeting. And they realized these Negroes about to take over, they get out of get up there. Mm-hmm. We had 10 million acres of land. Now we're talking about 50 black-owned lending institutions. They came down hard. Okay, and you don't even know that history. They kept it hid from us and make us think that we never tried to do for self. Make us think that we were stupid. Make us think that we didn't know how to handle money. All right? When in fact, they just came and wiped us out. This is what they have done to us over and over ever since they come in contact with us. Destroy whatever we do, and then lie and say we never did it. So we got to study our history so we can give our young black people the hope, the confidence that we can do it for ourselves. We lack confidence because we think that something is wrong with us. We got alpha slavery syndrome. Why don't y'all just get over it? We keep getting over you. We're tired of you messing with us. We're going to have to show these people that we're serious, that look, we don't need you no more. And let me tell you something right now. You know, white lives should matter because white folks better understand that they don't matter no more. To the same people who enslaved us, they use you white people to enslave us, keep us in line. Now that they have taken over the world economically, they don't need you no more, and they don't want to share the wealth they stole from us with you. But that's why they're giving you the shot, too, to kill you as well as us. That's their plan. They don't need you anymore, white folks, because you, white folks, are not having enough babies to keep America. By 2042 to 2045, say, either 2042 or 2045, white folks will be the minority in America. Therefore, through the use of political power, black and brown can take over. And so what they're doing is bringing in the Chinese to take your place, white folks, because you cannot keep black folks in line because you're not having enough babies.
Broke that down, Mrs. Gordon. What do you think about that?
Well, they are now coming up with laws to ban and make abortion illegal. At one point, they was trying to control the population. Now, as he said, they're trying to increase the population. There's always underlined motive to these laws and changes that they're coming up with. And as I say that also, look at now they are telling you what terminology you can use in your classrooms to teach it, to teach your history. They're making it more difficult for you to teach your history because of the terminology, because of the books that they're banning. Once again, it's a control method. If we do not teach our children our history in our homes or in our after-school programs or come up with our own schools so that we're not dictated, then what you think we have lost generations, we're going to have even more because they are not going to be taught in the schools what little they do teach anyway. And books that might try, if they're reading, they're getting education, they're getting knowledge. But they're banning these books, they're throwing them out the schools. They're telling you that you can't use this terminology or that terminology.
Come on, tell me.
Pardon me?
Go ahead.
What did you say, Mrs. Gordon?
I was saying this is another method of control with the minds. They don't want the history. They want this history of Emmett Till and other stories like it. They want it to sweep it under the rug and make it disappear and act like it never happened.
That's right. They even trying to say, somebody told me that they were trying to say in a history book that black folks just wandered into America. We weren't brought here.
It was transactional. Listen, it was a job. I will tell you from my own eyes, when I was homeschooling my children, middle school books, whenever their books came, I would go right to the section about us, and I would look for the enslavement period. And one of them said that it was a job. It was an employment situation. Needless to say, that was into that book. It landed somewhere. But see, here's the thing. See, just to what you were saying, Mrs. Gordon, they're changing all of this information that you can get and what you can say. And even if you do self-teach, and even if we do have our great schools, when they go out into what society, what's the interaction going to be with those who are the powers that be, if you will? And so it's only separation. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, because you're going to be interacting. We can no longer say in this world, but not of it. And the reason why is because God has declared that it is time. We cannot stay any longer. Even what is Minnesota? What would she say? Best wishes for your success. We're out of here.
That's right.
And those who remain, there'll be a separation. It'll be physical or incarceration, the way that it's going. But let me not raise up too much. Let me calm down here.
No, bring it up. You know, one thing about COVID-19 and them lockdowns, you know, they burned us out of the South, the runners up north.
Mm.
Statistics say that black folks lost 40% of our businesses under these lockdowns. And so Brother Louis Ali can tell you about how they're coming into the Atlanta area, 5,000 at per week? And he got to tell us about his cousin who set up the new Black Wall Street right outside of Atlanta and how that's been a big success. You know, the Underground Railroad is in effect. We're sliding back home. And not even slowly. It's happening fast. So all praise is due to Allah. We're going to take over these 8 states just by flooding them and then voting them people out of office. I ran for head of the county commissions down here in 2020. I didn't win, but they already asked me if I could run again. Yeah, because we're gonna make everything fair and square down here in Terrell County. So we come on home, y'all. Come on back home. Come on back home.
Well, look, I wanna buy some property in Appaloosa, Louisiana. Talking about home, Georgia too. You know, when we talk about all of this and Black Wall Street, I would be remiss if I did not lift up my own little town where I grew up. And I kept, you know, as people would ask me, how did you, you know, become a member of the nation? How did you meet Minister Farrakhan? How did this? And, you know, you're so quote-unquote militant now. And I'm like, this nation was right for me because, look, we had the Opelousas Massacre. And I would like to venture and think that my family was in the mix because it's designated as September 28th. This is 1868 in St. Landry Parish. And it's also referred to as the Opelousas. Here we go, Dr. Ridgely, the Opelousas riot by some historians. But, you know, they're saying that this is one of the most greatest violence acts in the Reconstruction area. And this was sparked, according to historians, by conflicts between black Republicans and white Democrats. I'm going to leave it right there. I would like to know your thoughts, but I just had to lift up Opelousas, Louisiana, you know, between Lafayette and Lake Charles, but I know we're winding down the show. But this is drumming up history. I was there recently, and all of what you all are sharing, even as I'm thinking about Allensworth, when Brother Louis Ali was talking, we're linked. We're family. We got this. We must unite.
We're going to have to write our own history, dig up, put these pieces together, because, you know, starting with Birth of a Nation, they've been lying in the media, in the Hollywood, ever since. And they think that they make you think that the West was run by a six-shooter and a Western rifle. No, it was run by poisoning the Native Americans with smallpox and killing off the buffalo. All right? That's how they eliminated. There were 60 million people over here in North America when Christopher Columbus got lost. All right? So they didn't kill them by shooting us. No, they poisoned us and killed off the buffalo. And they thought that we were going to perish in two generations by 1896. But we did, because what? We started medicating ourselves. We started taking care of ourselves, and we can do it again. Okay? This whole medical, as you see in the Newfoundland Call newspaper, even the head of the FLCCC, one of the most renowned ICU doctors in the world, he said that he didn't learn what he knows now about the human body when he was going to med school. He had to find out that on his own, and that the human body is made to heal itself if you would just get out the way, put the right food in it, and do intermittent fasting. That's the way we say in the Nation of Islam, Master Prophet Muhammad taught us since 1930 to fast. That solved all of our problems. Now, eminent doctors all over the world are bearing witness to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and that is fasting. One meal a day, okay? Eat whole wheat bread. I'm going to put this in the next article. I'm going to talk about more things that they told us from Rosanna, Sister Charlene, about the protocol to fight proteins out of your system, okay? And it's running right down what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has given us. We've been given a defense mechanism, because our bodies were made to live over 1,000 years, but yet we destroy our life by putting the poison this society puts out for us to eat and to drink. I digress. I can talk forever on this issue. Thank you so much for having me on, and I hope I haven't taken up too much time, but thank you, Sister Gordon. You as you started rapping, you're talking to her. Look, we got to have her back. This sister here, she's a warrior.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Dr. Ritchie, thank you for the transition. Mrs. Gordon, would you please take 2 minutes for your closing remarks?
I'd like to thank you, Sister Colleen and Sister Donna, for inviting me on. I was bringing something to the table, but I think I'm going away with a lot more than I brought to the table. I've got a good education and a lot of knowledge, very interesting conversation, and I would really like to just come and tune in and listen on a weekly basis if I might do so, not to participate, but just to be in the audience, because I think there's much to be learned.
Would you please? We would love that. We would love that. And you have enriched us so much, and thank you. Thank you for that. We'll make sure to keep you abreast of the link so that you don't have to look for us. We'll be coming to get you. How about that?
That sounds great.
Wonderful. Be a friend. Tell a friend. Yes, Dr. Richard,
right.
Real quick.
Now, and you remember, Ms. Gordon, you can always ask a question and make a comment. You don't have to be a guest. You are always make a comment, ask a question. Thank you.
That's exactly right. We'll set the phone.
Sister Avery, I believe she was our guest speaker for our 60th anniversary of Emmett's death. Minister Farrakhan was supposed to come, and he took ill, and he sent her in his place.
Oh, wow. Any footage, any audio, I'm going to look for that. Do you have anything that you can share of that? I'm sure it's in our archives, but we have you right here.
Okay. I don't know what I have at my fingertips. As I said, I lost my daughter in 2020, and a lot of stuff was in her home, and I still have to go through stuff.
Yes, ma'am. I understand. Our condolences for the loss of Sister Erica. Well, we're going to move on and close out the show, and thank you all so much. Remember, MinisterAva.com is the website. Mrs. Gordon, you can start right there, MinisterAva.com. Thank you to our guest, Mrs. Ali Gordon, Student Minister Abdul Shahid Muhammad, guest co-host Dr. Ridley Muhammad, Executive Producer, I will say, Brother Darius Muhammad, Producer Sister Donna Muhammad, and guest host, I already said Dr. Ridley. Dr. Ridley, that means you gave a 1-2 punch, right? Very importantly, we want to thank you, the Elevated Places listeners and callers, because you know, you all are so very important, and we're so very important to Student Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad. There is something that I want to announce before we go. I want to remember to the announce Brother Student Minister Abdul Shahid and the brothers and sisters in Holly Springs, Mississippi. Their program, which was also broadcasting tonight, simulcasting, is called Mississippi on the Move, and they are sharing this program again tonight on their platform as well, so we can support them. Mississippi on the Move. Also, we cannot go out without asking you, Mrs. Gordon, to announce again some of the upcoming initiatives and anything, if you can take another 1 to 2 minutes to talk about what we can look forward to regarding Mrs. Till Mobley.
April 28th, there will be a statue erected at the Argo Summit High School where Mrs. Mobley graduated, and I will be trying to get that information out to you. Loyola University on October 22nd launched a scholarship in honor of her. She received her master's degree from there in 1971. There, I will be having a program sometime in April to showcase the fruits of Mrs. Mobley's labor, showcasing many of the Emmett Till players from the various generations that she trained.
And remind us of the encouragement to see the docuseries. It's Let the World See, correct?
Yeah, Let the World See. Also, the story of Mamie Till Mobley, Women of the Movement is what it's called. It was launched on ABC Channel 7. I believe it's running on Hulu now. And Let the World See was paralleling it. And that was a documentary of everything that occurred from 1955 up until Mrs. Mobley expired. I'm a commentary on there, and so is Pastor Wheeler Parker, who was a cousin in the house in Mississippi the night they took Emmett. He's the last living one. I'm the last living one with knowledge. I have a brother that's younger that was in the house here in Chicago as things unfolded in Mississippi.
Wow. Sister, we are so honored to be in your presence and to also drink from your fountain of knowledge. We have about 45, 50 seconds left. Would you like to add anything before we go?
There is a traveling museum, a children's museum that's being showcased. It's in Indianapolis, Indiana, and it will be going to several other states. I believe it will be in Alabama this coming, the 19th of November. I can send you over a schedule of that particular museum that's going to be traveling, because I know it's going to be in the state of Mississippi several times.
Wonderful. We look forward to it. Mrs. Gordon, thank you so much for being with us. And again, to you, Dr. Ridley, thank you. I'm so honored to have been a co-host as well as you, Dr. Ridley, with you. And in this last 10 seconds, I want to again lift up the listener callers of Elevated Places and thank Allah God for the life and love and legacy of Student Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad, who has helped create this along with her family. Brother Darius, thank you so much for having us all and for keeping this alive. I'm Sister Charlene Muhammad saying we hope you return for next Thursday night's Beam of Light, Elevated Places. Peace and blessings.